Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with North Carolina-based jazz guitarist and educator Adam Rose. We took a good dive into his new 2026 album called Holler Serenade and his life in the world of music. He brings together Asheville's jam band energy and straight-ahead jazz in a groove-driven quartet setting on a project recorded live in a single day with minimal preparation. Built around spontaneity and interaction, the album captures musicians meeting in the moment, balancing dance-driven rhythms with open-ended improvisation. He has over 20 years of experience, and it all began in Philadelphia. From there, he spent time in New York City, and now he calls North Carolina home for some time. It's quite a story. Enjoy this interview. But I'm really looking forward to getting into the album, getting into your history. So thank you again for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So let's begin our journey. I always start with this question, and it's 6 years ago, this pandemic was changing our lives and rearranging so much, especially for musicians. How did you get through that COVID era, and how has it influenced the way that you create and live today?
So the pandemic, I actually went back to grad school. I was in Durham, North Carolina, and a school there, North Carolina Central, which is a great jazz program. I hadn't heard of it until I lived in Durham, but Branford Marsalis teaches there, his old band, Joey Calderazzo, a lot of great musicians who are local who have moved down there from New York. And they needed a graduate assistant in the guitar program. So I jumped into that, and my first year there was online only because it was right in the thick of the pandemic. And then second year we had in-person classes and gigs started popping up back again around Durham. And it kind of, the timing worked out great for me because I had recently moved to Durham, North Carolina from Philly. So it was a great way to kind of get into the music scene there.
So talk to me a little bit about the new album. What was it that you were going for with this? It's such a unique sound. Talk to me a little bit about what your vision for this album was.
So the vision was, I called it Mountain Jazz Quartet. The album's titled Holler Serenade. The vision was basically combining East Coast, New York City or Philly jazz and my roots up there with coming down to Asheville and being in a mountain town. And the last 3 years I've been here, there's a lot of work here, local gigs for musicians, a lot of breweries, a lot of cafes that have live music. So I've been playing 200, 250 gigs a year in every style, jazz, but also Americana, also funk. And a big part of the scene here is funk, is like party bands, dance bands, you know, that kind of funk with a lot of horns. And the jazz gigs kind of go with that. You know, you play in trad jazz groups where there's swing dances, or Django jazz groups where people are dancing to that. So basically, long story short, I end up doing a lot of gigs with people. I wanted to kind of write music and bring players together that represented both of those, the kind of jazz element and the mountain kind of funk dance vibe of Asheville. And I was playing a ton of gigs. Steve Lespine is a great bassist, legendary New York City bassist. I just moved down here. And we were playing a lot of local jazz gigs. And I played a couple times with Jeff Seip, who's another legendary fusion jazz drummer, funk jazz drummer. I mean, he plays in all kinds of styles. And same with Taylor Pearson. He's the keyboardist on the album. And like me, he plays in all. He'll play jazz one day. He'll play funk the next. So it's kind of that Asheville scene of all these different styles of music. And I didn't want to do anything. I wanted to do something that kind of nodded my hat to all that, as well as something that was original, you know. And so that, so there's kind of elements of straight ahead jazz, there's elements of funk. I think one song I broke out the wah-wah pedal to do kind of a little ode to the 70s there. Yeah. But yeah, it's all those elements mixed up together.
I love that combination of Holler Serenade. Is that original? Is that something that you coined?
Yeah, I coined that.
I love it.
Thanks.
Yeah. I remember I did my show a few weeks ago and I profiled you on there, and I was just talking with my sidekick, my engineer. I was like, man, I love the title of this album. It's wonderful. So it's cool. Very cool.
Great.
So what are you hoping the listener gets from this album? What's your hope?
So I really hope they listen all the way through. Each song's a little different. I think each song tells a story, and they're great. I really want, I'm a songwriter. That's how I learned to play guitar. It's how I learned to play music, is I started writing folk songs and rock songs. I've always written songs, and that was how I eventually got into jazz. So I hope people really enjoy the songs. If there are other jazz musicians listen to it would be great if they started playing them themselves. That would be so cool if they kind of worked out to be standards on their own. For just the casual listener, I hope they're really drawn in by the melodies and the interplay, and that just enjoy it,
So take me back to your roots. Are you originally from North Carolina?
No, I've been down here about 5 or 6 years, but I'm originally from Philly.
Okay.
And so learned to play guitar at a summer camp, Quaker camp, where we played like Neil Young songs, hippie songs, folk songs. I think that's how a lot of people learn how to play guitar. And then eventually with songwriting and getting into more complexity, got into jazz. And when I was in high school, joined the jazz band, linked up with some incredible young jazz musicians. I'm sure you've got some of them have gone and become really famous. Bilal Oliver, Jahlil Shaw, they were already talented and established, and were playing at a place called the Philadelphia Cleft Club. So they had a youth band. I went in there not knowing really much at all about jazz, and they just threw me into gigs with these guys, and I started learning the tunes. Reggie Workman came down from John Coltrane birthday celebration, and Jimmy Heath was there. So I got exposed to a lot of incredible musicians my age and just Philadelphia legends. And that was my entrance into jazz. Studied with Jimmy Bruno in Philly, the legendary guitarist, for a while. I went up to New York for a few years and kind of got knocked around by that city. And, went to school up there, played in lots of different settings, played in rock bands. And that's it. I've been at music for a while. I taught full time for many years. And I've always kind of been writing and been evolving, and found my way in North Carolina. And that's kind of what happened.
So, what was the first live jazz show that you saw that blew you away, or the first live experience that galvanized this idea that you wanted to do this with your life?
That was at a little club in Philadelphia called JJ's Grotto. It was a little underground spot, maybe like Smalls in New York, a pizza and wine restaurant, and we used to go there. A kid from my high school kind of discovered it, and we used to see Jimmy Bruno play there a couple times a week. And I'd never seen anything like that before. I'd never seen anyone play so fast, so incredibly, and you'd be about 3 feet away from him. Real small, intimate club. Sometimes they play acoustic, just archtop guitar and bass. I saw Frank Vignola there. I saw a lot of great musicians come through.
So to have Jimmy be your teacher, that had to be surreal, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I felt like I had arrived, and it was so cool. It was elite group of young musicians. I was in high school, in my senior year of high school, when I started studying with him. Went over to his house and in the art museum area. That was so cool.
So let me ask you this. So did you know this was going to be your path? You were going to become a musician, or were there other things that were on your radar?
I always loved music. I don't think I was expected or necessarily thought about being a professional musician as a career. Simply because my parents weren't professional musicians. My friends' parents weren't professional musicians. So, my idea of music was what I saw on MTV as a kid. I definitely wanted to be that. I definitely thought I'd be a rock star at some point with a jet and a limo and be one of those guys in the music videos. But the path to becoming kind of a professional working musician who teaches and who plays lots of gigs, that was something that kind of happened organically and by chance, and I had to discover it myself. I didn't even really know that that existed as a career path.
So, when you decided that you were going to become a professional musician, or that was something that was seriously in your future, you have this idea of how your life's going to turn out, how everything's going to transpire. But Then it happens. Then you live this life. What's been the difference between what you thought it was going to be and actually living this life?
Right. So I think when I first got in, I did imagine that I'd somehow be part of that MTV style rock star thing. And then, you know, I started playing in bands, started playing in clubs, and was happy with that for a while. Just to, you know, it was really exciting to go out and have your friends come see. And that was also my social life, you know. But, you know, maybe in my late 20s, I started thinking, okay, I've got to get, you know, I've got to pay some bills and, you know, I want a different lifestyle. So it just seemed like I tried a couple different things, and teaching lessons was a good way to kind of stay in music, to say, hey, I'm making a living at music, and I could teach. And, you know, I enjoyed that. And that was, I wasn't really sure if that was what I'd do every day for the rest of my life. But, you know, I ended up in North Carolina kind of by chance, and was just playing around at local jams, and fate or chance led me into that position as a grad assistant at NCCU. And that is really when I got, you know, I'd kind of reignited, I guess, my career and the possibilities about having a career as a performing musician, you know, just being around these great players. We performed at Lincoln Center, you know, so that kind of put it back in the realm of the possibility where I could be performing again.
So what do you like the best about being a professional musician? What gets you up every day? What pushes you? What do you love the most?
Truly, it's the opportunity to get better at the instrument, to expand my understanding of the music, of the history. It's very, you know, it's like waking up every day and just chipping away at a mountain. And it doesn't always feel like you're making progress, but a year goes by and I'll put on an album and I can hear nuances the players are playing that I couldn't hear before. And I can play along with it in a way that I couldn't play before. So it's the musical progress that I think that's definitely what keeps me going at this point.
So why do you love this music we call jazz?
Well, it affects me emotionally in a way, especially those classic Blue Note recordings or Louis Armstrong. You know, the first, something about Louis Armstrong's trumpet playing, that was really got through to me when I was a young kid in high school listening to indie rock and bands like that. You know, I heard him take a trumpet solo on You Go to My Head, and it's a cliche, but I felt it in my blood. It was like the first time you drink alcohol or something. That maybe has a negative connotation, but it went into my veins. And some of the classic recordings, I still feel that, the Blue Note recordings, you know, in all great music, I feel that it's your tastes change over the years. I listen to classical music now, but jazz to me is it's uniquely American. It happened in my hometown of Philly. It happened, you know, the greatest days of, if you want to study classical music and talk about Bach and Mozart, that was in another continent and a long, long ago and far away. You know, it doesn't really, it's not a part of our lives, but jazz is something that's still happening, and you know, the legendary heyday of it, I've been in the room with some of those same players. I've met them, some of them I got to play with, and you know, I feel it's very unique, it's very American. The message in there is, it resonates with me deeply. I could go on and on. I don't want to bore you, but you know, there's all intellectual side of the idea of let's create with what we have, you know, let's let everyone get a say. It's very much a neighborhood music, you know, it's very much democratic and uniquely American. And it's a great thing.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm going to preface this next question off the fact that, you know, Philly is a very historic jazz hub, as like Kansas City is. And I go down to 18 and Vine, and I remember years ago when I was wrapping my head around jazz, I used to just wonder how many musicians would have been walking around at any given heyday time, from Miles going to the Foundation, Bird walking down the street, going somewhere. There was just all these players that were congregating there, and you come from the land of Coltrane, and I was wondering what would be the show that I would go to. Like, even Robert Altman in 95 made Kansas City, and he kind of recreated these scenes of Kansas City back in the Prohibition days. And, Count Basie, Murray Lou Williams, and there was all these figures. And I'm wondering with you, with Philadelphia, if you could go back in time, get into a time machine and go back and see one musician, a show during that time in Philly, where would you go?
Wow. Well, I've heard in my time there was Zanzibar Blue, Chris's Jazz Cafe, which Jimmy Bruner really helped build that up. Still going. Time, South. There's some other clubs because I haven't lived in Philly for, 7, 8 years now. The Clef Club in the heyday. I always used to hear about this club. I think it was called Gert's on South Street or Gertie's. I might be saying it wrong because people would just talk about it in conversation, but Miles Davis and Coltrane played there. Pat Martino played there. The Heath Brothers. I think what happened too was you'd have someone like Miles coming into Philly, and maybe he'd bring John Coltrane with him, but he'd get a local rhythm section. So I heard stories about the Heath Brothers playing with the Miles band. That would probably be a show I would have liked to see,
The one thing when you talk about Jimmy Bruno is that the beauty of this jazz community and the history of the jazz lineage is that the elders always pass along their wisdom and knowledge and encourage young players to get into this art form. You've been around a lot of players, you've been around for a while. What do you try to teach the younger players about this world of jazz? What do you want them to understand about it?
Well, it's taken me so long how to learn how to play and learn jazz. So I think I can save them a lot of time. And I think the young players coming up, they're already surpassing what a lot of people my age could do technically. And they grow up kind of approaching it like a classical music. So they know how to learn the music. They know how to practice with a metronome. They know a list of standards. When I was growing up, there was the real book, but even that was a little hard to get a hold of, So we had to learn, I think, more by word of mouth. So I think the music has become almost like a classical music where they know everything about it that took me years to learn and how to learn to play it. The only thing I would say is try to get that in-person experience. One thing that I was so fortunate with was they used to have a club, Ortlieb's Jazz Club in Philly. And in my first year of playing jazz, I would go to the jam session and I got sitting with, Mickey Roker, the legendary drummer, was in the house band, or Byron Landham. These were guys that were in the major leagues of jazz, and as maybe a 17-year-old who could barely play, I got to play with them. So I would say try to make sure you go to the jam sessions and play with the older players and just try to pick up what you can in person. That's so important.
So, Holler Serenade is the wonderful new album. If anybody wants to pick up a copy that will benefit you the most, is Bandcamp the best place to go?
Bandcamp's the best place, yeah.
Okay,
You
good.
can get a physical copy there or buy a download.
And it's streaming everywhere. In live shows, if anybody wants to catch you live, any of the other good business in your world, where do they go?
Come to Asheville, look me up on Facebook. I'm playing 4 or 5 times a week in Asheville, whether it's at a local restaurant or cafe or one of the jazz clubs here. If they're in Asheville, look up Adam Rosen.
Okay.
They'll find me live.
I will make sure to put these links in the show notes. Adam, so great to meet you, sir. Thank you for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz. Best of luck with everything.
Thanks a lot, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in North Carolina, New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Adam for his story. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.